Welcome to the Amateur Movie Review Hour. I'm Trevor. With me, I have Megs and I have Josh.
Good evening.
Heavy breathing.
Tonight's movie that we're going to discuss is Bottle Rocket, from 1996. I just briefly want to just go over what an independent film is. There's a whole history to it that would take a lot more time than I wanted to put into it. So the summary is...
This is the Brown moment? Yeah, we're talking about independent films for the Brown moment?
This is the Brown moment.
I like it when you tell people that we're doing a Brown moment so that we're prepared for the Brown.
So, yeah, for this Brown moment, I'll be doing the independent... But a definition of independent film, independent movie, indie film, indie movie, whichever you want to say. It can sometimes be a feature or a short film that's produced outside of major studios, major distributions, companies, though sometimes some of those major distribution companies will distribute independent movies. They're usually, you can tell them apart by their content, the style, what their vision was, what they were trying to do with it. Usually these movies are smaller budget. Like, they're not going to have the budget of Marvel or any mid-range, like medium, like a comedy movie. Like, it's not going to get that type of a budget. And you will sometimes find actors who make their debut or directors who make their debut or well-known actors that go into a film role in these independent movies because they like somebody's vision or they owe the writer or the director or somebody they know a favor and they're going to show up in it. Now, a good example is like... Travolta and Bruce Willis in Pulp Fiction. Big names, right? But didn't make a lot of money, I think, on the front end.
Well, those guys were both on the downside of their careers. Sure. And that's what saved their careers.
Sure. And I think that could be another characteristic of independent movies, too. Sometimes actors who've gone under the radar or have had some failed movies and then do something like an indie movie and boom,
they're back on top.
Yep. Yeah, you could also another characteristic of independent movies is where they're released, how long they're released. Sometimes they're released in independent movie theaters locally or at film festivals, not really put into like major movie theaters. Well, I've never seen an I probably have, and I just don't know that I've seen an independent movie in theater.
I saw Star Wars in the theater.
Sure. Yeah.
That's an independent.
Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah. I think I saw that in theater. Yeah.
The AC wasn't working. Arizona, terrible.
House of Yes, I saw in the theater. I've seen a lot of independent films. Back in the day, though, you kind of had to go to certain theaters to see them.
Oh, yeah.
Or they would play just during the day in bigger theaters. They wouldn't get, like, a lot of showings. But I would drive out to Scottsdale and see stuff in the Camel View Theater that kind of specialized in the more art house films.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they did. I did asbestos inspection on that theater.
I loved that theater.
It was a pretty cool theater. I have pictures of the Mrs. Robinson I don't know if it was there. I don't know how long it was there, but I know that they had a mural of like the Mrs. Robinson scene with the leg all kinked and Dustin Hoffman in the background.
Yeah,
they had a couple other murals that I can't remember. But they had asbestos on the fireproofing, which is typical because of when it was built.
Yeah.
What is the Amateur Movie Review Hour?
Before we began our podcast, the three of us curated a list of approximately 100 movie genres. We then fed that list to a magical random generator that we used to provide us with the movie genre. The three of us take turns choosing movies to watch that fit into the chosen genre. We then watch that movie and attempt to return bi-weekly to review and discuss that movie. The only movies that we have banned are Marvel and DC movies from the past 15 years. I am not a professional movie reviewer. I just love to watch movies and then review those movies with my friends and you, my fellow screen fiend.
Tonight's movie is Bottle Rocket. The writer is Owen Wilson and Wes Anderson. And the director is Wes Anderson. The actors are Owen Wilson, Luke Wilson, Robert Musgrave, Andrew Wilson, Lumi Cavazos, yeah, and James Caan. Or Khan. Is it Khan?
It's Khan.
Release date, February 21st, 1996. And the runtime, 91 minutes.
Hey, he's named after the festival. Khan. And also the space pirate.
Oh, yeah.
This played by...
I don't remember.
Ricardo Montalban.
Greatest
pecs.
Greatest best. I was going to say breasts, but okay.
Pecs. Yeah. Pecs.
They look like breasts when I was a child. Yeah.
Megs, why this movie?
Well, this movie was my first... It was my introduction into Wes Anderson. Of course it was. It was his first movie. It was kind of back when I was just really getting into the independent film genre. I was already kind of in... You know, I was kind of getting into it, but this really, like, knocked my socks off when I saw it. I rented it at the video store, and I watched it and then rewound it and watched it again. I loved it so much. It was because of this movie that I saw Rushmore on opening weekend and Tenenbaums on opening weekend. I fell in love with Wes Anderson's style because of this movie. And it just, I think I went full force into independent film, and that's pretty much all I watched for a long time. I of course watched a few bigger movies, but I really stuck to the smaller genre. And I started following these guys' careers. You know, I prefer the Wes Anderson movies that have Owen Wilson as a co-writer. Okay. I think that they're the best ones. Some of the newer ones have been decent, but you know, he took a turn down to me with Moonrise Kingdom. I thought that was one of the worst ones he's ever done, and I know people love it, but I thought that his writing style just really went downhill right there.
And that was the kid one, right?
Yeah. Okay. And that was part of the reason it was so terrible.
Slightly pedophilic. Slightly.
Now, Royal Tenenbaums is what I first remember actually seeing and recognizing that it was Wes Anderson.
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say my favorite is Life Aquatic.
Life Aquatic is a great one.
It's very childlike, you know, and everything, you know, because it's like this Jacques Cousteau character, you know, we're not even talking about that movie. But anyways, I'm going to say that's my favorite Wes Anderson movie, like, of them all. That's just my opinion of it.
And you just get so much Bill Murray.
You get a lot of Bill Murray.
Oh, yeah.
There's always a family aspect in a lot of his movies, too, yeah. Which, mm-hmm. I mean, like, sure, that's great, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But there's always a little bit of it, so... This one doesn't have children. That's probably the best part of it.
Yeah.
Except for the sister. It has Grace. How old was she?
She was like a 13-year-old or something like that. She was good.
Oh, is that... Was she also related to them?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so.
No. You're just talking as like a...
She was just
a child actor in it, you know?
She was a good child actor.
Yeah. She wasn't horrible.
But I mean, in this movie, you can say how childlike both the lead characters are, or actually all three for the most part.
Shit. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of your child characters. This is the emotionally stunted tricorder there, you know? Yeah, and then you got the future man, and he's the... Yeah.
I think that everybody at some point had a friend like Dignan.
Yeah.
You know,
I
that
never
weird.
Had, oh, though. That's what I'm saying. Well,
you
we
had
said
the weird kid who really wanted to impress his friends, who thought a lot of his friends, and had that. He has a childlike thing about him where he's overly trusting of others. At the same time, like the bad things that he wants to do are to show off to his friends or to make his friends like him more.
He definitely scampers. That sad thing. He's a scamper. You know, he like scampers around all the time too. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, look at him scampering. Look at that.
You just want to say scamper.
I did. I wanted to say it at least four times there in this episode. Scamper, scamper. We're done.
It was a very... what was the... There was a movie that he had this... He played, like, the same character... A similar character to Dignan. Was it Mr. Wood? No, because I was fucking...
I think he played a very similar character in Tenenbaums. Or, I'm sorry. Yeah, in Tenenbaums. Because he wanted everybody to like him so much. He wanted to be part of their family. And he wanted... You know, he was always going to the mother, Angelica Houston's character, and asking her, you know, having her read his work, you know, because he wanted feedback, and he was just so wanted to be part of them. And it's like this, where he wants them to be part of his crew. He wants to be part of this crew, and he wants his friends to be part of this crew. And I think he's good at playing that kind of character, you know, that kind of wide eyed,
The high and tight
was good. The high and tight was great.
It's like, okay, this is what we're doing here. That's fine.
Yeah. Were you in the military? No, I just have short hair.
Just have short hair. I got it. It was like for speed reasons, you know? Like, I didn't have that hair covering my ears. Like, that's where I talk into my walkie talkies and stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I need to be streamlined here, you know?
I did like the other grift of the movie.
Oh yeah,
that was a good one. Yeah. It's like, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah,
like you got played. Like, sure.
Mm-hmm. But he doesn't hold anything against those guys.
I know.
He still wanted them to have those belt buckles.
Sure. You know? Just go ahead and give them out. Yeah.
Bob, I don't know what to think about Bob.
I liked Bob. I'm disappointed, and I don't understand, and I really didn't look into it, but I don't know why Bob didn't really work with Wes Anderson ever again after this. He was in the original short that this movie is based on.
Yeah.
He reprised his role for the feature length, and in the later on, he worked with Luke and Owen Wilson individually on different movies in small parts, but he never worked with Wes Anderson again, which is, you know, did they have a falling out? Did he just not like working with him? Because I thought Bob did a good job in his character. He seems natural enough. He doesn't seem overly wooden. And I thought his character was kind of interesting. He's like this weird rich kid whose parents are, you know, traipsing about the world. They just leave their two older adult sons. These are not like 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
You know, these are like, what, 20? What was he, 27? I think he was 27.
Late
20s. And then he has an older brother who's clearly going to be pushing 30. And they just live in the house. They go to the club. They, you know, Bob dresses like some sort of like wannabe gangster.
Sure.
You know, clearly doesn't know what he's doing, you know, with his life.
Growing weed in the backyard.
Yeah. And you know, the future man's driving it's around like in his very expensive Ford Bronco. I mean, back then you could get one a lot cheaper than you can now, but.
Oh, yeah.
It's still, you know, very nice car.
Yeah.
Some guy made him famous. I don't remember who it was.
What?
Who made the Bronco famous, and that's why it became more expensive.
Yeah, that's not why they're... I mean, they're famous. They're known. They're known for that.
Pineapple, something like that. OJ.
Yeah,
One of those juices.
One of those juices.
Yeah, they were Putra Man and his buddy were a character. We're a pair of characters.
Like, yeah.
I get it. You're the older brother.
They're the bullies.
Yep.
Yeah. They're the preppy bullies. And you have to have the preppy bully from, you know, and these are guys who grew up watching 1980s movies with a preppy bully, you know. And so it was an appropriate villain.
And Luke, like his character's whole thing was, oh, he was exhausted.
Yeah. He was exhausted.
It's like, what's that Catcher in the Rye, Holden?
Mm-hmm.
Holden Caulfield?
Yeah, it sounds like an excuse that Holden Caulfield would have had. Like, I was exhausted.
That was a really popular thing that you'd see on shows and movies from back then, and it was usually with young Gen Xers.
Okay.
Gen Xers, they would just be like, I was really tired, I needed a break. You know, it was kind of that joke where it's like, you know, your parents didn't need that break. They just kept going, you know. And now, sure. Now we joke more about the millennials doing that, you know. And but it started as a joke with the Gen Xers. Like, oh, he's just exhausted. He needs a little break. He needs some time.
It was fascinating. Mm-hmm. Like, if I had watched this movie when it came out and how old I was, I wouldn't have gotten any of it. Way over my head.
Yeah, I think I was, what was I? I was 22 when this movie came out.
Yeah.
Or when I saw it, I was 22. So, yeah, it was like kind of my age range. You know, I was a little younger than than they were, but I was, you know.
Oh yeah. Josh, do you have any older experiences with this movie, or is this the first time you've seen it?
So my first Wes was Rushmore, and then I came back around to this one, and then went on further to Tenenbaums and whatnot. But it, I mean, it never grabbed me very hard because it's so, it is what it is, you know, and it really doesn't resonate for me. You know, like Middle America, I can't grasp that for the most part. I see it and I watch it and I'm fine. But it's like, I don't know, it's just, it's a different living style for me. You know what I mean? Just seeing that on it's just like, what the fuck are they doing? Like, it's confusing. You know what I mean? No. They're Texas. It's a whole area where I just don't get it. You know what I mean? It's like me trying to understand the Bible Belt. You know what I mean? Like,
Texas is the Southwest. We're in the Southwest.
It's Middle America to me, you know. But Tornado Alley's what separates everything, you know. Them Dude, Twisters.
It's a buddy film, and it actually has a little bit more where it's like, it has a bunch of things. It's not just because it's a buddy travel film, but then it's a buddy heist film, and then it's a buddy, also, you know, it has all these different, they move story, around a lot. Yeah, it's a love story. It has a lot of stuff. It has a lot of moving parts, which is most movies kind of pick one and run with it. This one, it's, hey, let's pick three and run with them, you know? So actually I'd say four, cause you throw in like the mean older brother, but I don't know. I think it's a fun movie.
I think it would have hit differently if I was of an age to understand it when it came out. I was not a fan of the movie.
Really?
Yeah. There were some moments where I was like, okay, cool. But overall, cohesively, I was like, ooh. Okay.
I just think it's a hilarious movie. There's just so much to let.
I would call it quirky. I think it's a quirky movie. Hilarious.
Well, it's not a bad movie. It didn't hit for me.
Trevor, let's get serious with Megs over here. She's over here toting this fucking movie, slapping this piece of shit. No, I'm just kidding. It's entertaining. See, no, it is.
No,
you know
it,
what I mean?
It is. Yeah. It is. It's just not hitting for me. It's not a bad movie. It doesn't mean I'm this movie shit.
Like, I totally get it. It's also an older film, and it ages a little bit. And when you watch it when you're older, you don't see it through the eyes of a younger person. And I get it.
I think it's also early craft for Wes, though, to whereas, like, if you look at his newer stuff, it's very... It's
stylized.
It's exactly,
because he only had $7 million to make this movie, and he makes the other ones with, you know, $100 million.
Well, I mean, they don't do anything with those. It's just, it's more about giving people money. It's not like anything's out there. You're like, oh my God, look at this fucking area in, or like they're CG or anything like that. Like, you
know, his movies are incredibly stylized now. Like, everything after this is incredibly stylized. Even Rushmore, on the smaller budget that it had, costume wise and, you know, I mean, it's a very different, and it had a very different look and feel.
I get it. Yeah,
I am a bottle rocket.
Mm-hmm.
I did enjoy Dignan's confidence, and whatever he did, he had just full confidence that he was going to succeed at it.
Yeah. Like, he had everything planned down to, and it was all written down in his little booklet. And
Yep. And that, I did see some early, later to be introduced or worked into other movies, like the flow chart or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
And it was also that thing. You kind of saw Luke Wilson in a little bit of the Tannenbaum character where he was depressed and having, you know, issues with his psyche and suicidal. He wasn't necessarily suicidal in this movie, but, you know, he was still having... It was having a breakdown of sorts.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, they jumped you right into that.
Yeah.
You
know. I mean, both of those guys played very similar characters from Tannenbaum characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, they weren't... Only Luke was in Rushmore, and he had a very small part. Owen wrote Rushmore, but he wasn't in it at all. And so you don't really see that, until Tannenbaum's, where they're kind of like, oh, very similar.
I can see that, definitely. Well, you guys just want to get into this?
Let's get into it.
This
90s independent movie?
Crack this indie movie wide open.
That was late to the party.
Splurge.
That was embarrassing.
That's how much I enjoyed that.
No, oh, that was a lot.
Tell me about the rabbits, George.
The movie begins with Anthony Adams, played by Luke Wilson, throwing open his room's casement windows when he hears a bottle rocket firework explode outside. A man makes a bird call. Anthony spots his friend Dignan, played by Owen Wilson, who is across the street hiding behind some bushes, signaling with a mirror. Luke throws on his jacket, picks up his bag, tosses tied together sheets out of his open window. Before he makes his escape, he fidgets with the red hospital band around his left wrist. There is a knock at Anthony's door. It is his psychiatrist. The doc eyes the sheet rope. It seems that Anthony's friend Dignan didn't think the hospital was voluntary, so he planned an escape. The doc lets the ruse happen. On the way out, the doc reminds Anthony that he doesn't have to save everyone. And the pair reunited. You didn't catch that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. On the way out, he screams at him. Or he doesn't scream at him. He just like, yeah, you don't have to save everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of comes through in the end. Yeah, we can talk about it.
Virtue, yeah. You know, he's a virtuous guy that has some mental issues. And, you know, sometimes when you overly take that, you know, it can cause problems for mm-hmm. your own sanity.
Yeah.
Sanity, that's the word. Satanism. Your own Satanism. Yeah. Believe.
Now on a Greyhound bus, Dignan asks the driver about the ETA. Dignan is happy with the answer. He hands Anthony an agenda that spans the next few months and also a plan for the next 50 years and into the 21st century. Dignan doesn't want to talk about the mental health stay with Anthony. He's just like, no, not going to have it. After being dropped off at the bus depot, I'm guessing the pair jump a fence as they talk about Dignan's new enthusiasm for working out. They're walking through a nice neighborhood. Dignan tells Anthony to put on the gloves as he jumps over another fence. The crime duo are stealing valuables from a house. Dignan steals some dimes, but Anthony doesn't really seem to be stealing anything of value. They make their escape. At a diner and grocery store combo, the two men give positive feedback to one another. Dignan rambles about introducing Anthony to Mr. Henry as Anthony plays pinball. When Dignan reveals that he stole some earrings, Anthony storms off. Turns out that it wasn't really a break-in, per se. The house belongs to Anthony's mom. Those earrings are something that Dignan wasn't supposed to touch. It's like, that's in the contract. Like, that's in the list of things Dignan's not supposed to... Like, I found that part hilarious. Yeah. I was like, that's funny.
Mm-hmm.
When Anthony remarks they should have stolen from Dignan's house, Dignan storms away. And I think it's ADR. How dare you? You know my mom and Jeff don't have anything or whatever.
They don't have anything worth stealing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know that we're... That's another reason he reminds me of those kids at school who
sure.
who would always and my brother had a friend like this. You know, it was one of those the kids who always had great stuff, but it was always at their dad's house, so you couldn't see it.
Yeah,
you know, I have a really cool skateboard, but you can't see it because I keep it at my dad's house. It was the divorce kids and back then divorce was, you know, in my time divorce was a little bit newer, and so you had those kids who had the dad and the stepdad. And so they'd always be like, oh, you know, I have some really cool video games, but you just can't see them because they're not at home, you know? Yeah. So it was, that's what he reminds me of.
Yeah.
Okay. Or like, yeah, we're getting a pool built soon.
Like, yeah. Someday we're going to have a pool. You'll see. It'll next be next summer.
We had
yeah.
to move it because there was a gas issue. There's gas lines.
Well, yeah. I have a girlfriend, but she's in Canada. Like we met, yeah. we met over.
She's
summer.
A model.
We met over yeah. the summer at camp. Back when kids used to go to camp all the time.
Yeah,
I never lied about shit like that when I was a kid. I just never like you know. I was like, I just didn't give a fuck what my friends really thought. I was
well,
like,
and most kids, a lot of kids didn't. It was, but there would be that one kid in the group who did.
Yep.
You know, yeah. it wasn't like all the kids were that kid. It was there was like one or two kids in that. You know, maybe in your class, and maybe not even in your group.
It was my friend. His name was Booger. I had a did he have a booger friend?
I had a booger friend.
He had a booger?
Greg Allred.
Oh.
That's his nickname. Booger.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm. He's never going to hear this.
He like for whatever my booger friend said, it was like the big secret was their daddy was doing some touching.
Oh, geez.
Oh
God.
Oh yeah.
Poor,
it got
poor family.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my mom told the state, and I think, oh, fuck yeah, dude. It was a...
That just got dark.
Yeah, I didn't do it.
We're talking about true. Poor Booger, and now he's going to, his daddy's going to jail.
But that was what I'm like, but that was what I was bringing to light, is like, kind of like, you know, there are people that do that little fibbing and the lies and whatnot. Sometimes they're covering up because they're getting touchy by somebody they shouldn't.
Sure, they want different type of attention. I'm only guessing. I'm not a fucking. Not a therapist or a psychologist.
He's not a therapist,
or a psychiatrist.
Child or older. He doesn't deal with trauma of any nature.
No, nope, I deal with asbestos. That's
asbestos.
What I
deal with. He deals with spores, molds, and fungus.
Yep. They can't say anything, but they can kill me.
I'm gonna give you a fucking T Brown jumper. Ghostbuster on the back, and when you and you give your little sample dishes, take a sample of that.
The next scene, Anthony meets Grace, his sister, at her Catholic private school. They have a talk about his absence. Apparently, he's a pilot. That's what Grace has been telling all her friends.
Yeah, my brother's away being a pilot.
Yep.
And that was also one of those in Arizona. Yeah, he was going to school, or everybody thinks also that he was going to school in Arizona. And yeah. it was that one of those weird things where he's like, what, 25 years old, 27 years old, and he has like a 13 year old little sister.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, mm-hmm. that's kind of a huge age gap with no other kids in between.
Yeah.
You're like, what's the story there? We'll never find out. No, we have no idea.
And Grace makes it known that she doesn't like Dignan.
Wait, she does like Dignan, but he lies.
Oh, sure, yeah,
she does like him.
Then in the car, Dignan and the getaway driver, Bob Mapplethorpe, have an interview. Bob's like, I grow weed in my parents' backyard. And Dignan's like, that's not how you give an interview. Or an impression. Like, no, don't do it like that. Grace wants to know what's going on. Grace wants to know... what is going to happen to Anthony and when he's coming home? He can't tell her. And so she's sad. She's very sad. Anthony now, as they drive away from Grace's school, Anthony decides to get out of the car because he's very upset about what Grace thinks of him. He's tripping that Grace thinks that he's a loser, not going to make anything up with his life. Like, that's harsh, man.
Yeah, Dignan's like, what does she do with her life? Yeah. You know, what does that 13-year-old do with her life? And Dignan's very serious about that. Yeah, he doesn't understand, like, why, you know, what is she doing with her life? Why do you care?
Dignan is very, very narcissistic.
He is narcissistic. I don't know that he's actually narcissistic.
Okay,
because
okay.
he does actually care about his friends, I think, more than they care about him.
He's a sociopath.
Sure.
I don't think he's a sociopath. And most sociopaths are also narcissists. I think that he's stunted, and he actually cares about his friends, and he cares about how people see him, and he cares about how people think about him. And most of those people don't think that much about him in return. Anthony does care about his friend,
yes.
But most other people don't give a shit about
This Dignan. Is true. Very true. Yes.
And I think Dignan is really just looking for love.
Yeah.
However he can get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just think he's stunted.
Well, we don't know really much of his backstory other than his later reveal about the
his mom and what Jeff. Was his stepdad's name Jeff?
I think so. I think it was Jeff.
His mom and Jeff don't have a whole lot to steal.
Yeah, that's true.
Because he's clearly not getting any love at home, if you know, and he just wants somebody to care or like him. I think he just wants somebody to like him.
Well, maybe that's what Mr. Henry. Maybe there's a reason why Mr. Henry is so appealing.
A father figure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's searching for a father figure.
Yeah.
Which is something you see a lot of in Wes Anderson's films.
Yes, definitely. But when I understood that theme or whatever, the plot for the character, it's like, okay, I can see that in the other movies.
Definitely just a father relationship. Yeah.
Definitely.
But either way, Bob fucking convinces the both of them to get back in the car. Now it's Bob's turn to ramble about his feelings with his brother, and he just fucking blows through a stop sign. Then at Bob's house, Future Man, who is played by Andrew Wilson, is Bob's older brother. He berates him when he finds one leaf in the pool. Stacy Sinclair gets a rundown of Anthony's decision to put himself into the hospital. He was exhausted. Why was he exhausted, or what happened? He explains what happened. He was just talking to... talking to somebody, and then they said something, and he said...
They were skiing or whatever. And
yeah.
Were they water skiing or skiing? They were at some... It was a vacation home at the other girls. The girl, the Stacy girl or whatever, was friends with. And he just said that he was sitting there while she was everybody was rambling on, and he was thinking, not only do I not want to hear this story, I don't want to hear any stories ever, again about skiing or whatever. And so he checked himself into.
Yeah, yeah. But while Anthony is telling everybody about this, in the background, Bob is being assaulted by Future Man.
Yeah, they didn't seem to pay any attention. He's being beaten by his brother in the house.
Yeah. Then it cuts to a gun buying, target making, and gun shooting montage. Bob has a bandage on his right earlobe. Did you get your earring torn out? At someone's house, Dignan explains that... I think it's Bob's house. Dignan explains the plan that is going to take place tomorrow night. Anthony questions the need for explosives. Dignan gets upset when the gun is touched. Bob states that he paid for the gun. Then Dignan threatens Bob. Dignan now wants to kick both of them out of the crew, but he quickly turns that around and then apologizes for kicking them out. They all agree that they are a team. Dignan continues to explain the plan for tomorrow night. Robbery night, the three men make their move to rob a bookstore. Ballsy move, because that's always where the money's at, is in the bookstore. Mm-hmm. Sure, no security, I get it. Anthony talks his way into the store, only to have Dignan then follow up with a gun. Dignan and Anthony take the bookstore worker in tow with them. Dignan holds him and another one at gunpoint, demanding the money. Dignan supervises the money handling. The successful robbers leave the store, hostages safe and unharmed. I like how he's like, hey, just put the money in these little bags. You don't have anything bigger? No, you don't have something the size for a dictionary?
He's just like, don't talk to me like that. And he's like, I'm sorry, sir. Anything larger?
Yeah. Those were pretty funny. It was like, I acquiesced so quick. Like, you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, he's just like, I don't want to be disrespectful to this older man. Yeah. But even when they just go into the store and he just kind of walks in and he's like, why do you have tape on your face?
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you have tape on your face?
Yeah, they both ask.
Why do you do that?
We cut back to Bob's, where the celebration is cut short when Anthony learns that the crew Dignan had learned from is just a landscaping company called the Lawn Wranglers. And that's where Dignan had worked previously. Now we cut to a gas station. Like, these cuts, like, it is really his style of, like, where he's explaining something and then, or somebody asks a question and then it cuts to, like, different time and place to answer the question or to finish a statement. So they're now at a gas station where Anthony asks Dignan why he isn't with the crew that's led by a very talented thief. He was fired from the Lawn Wranglers. And Dignan misses that job. It was the best thing he ever had. It was his one and only shining moment. Then he asks Anthony not to mention to Bob about getting fired. The trio hit the road. Dignan has Bob stop at a roadside firework merchant. Dignan shoots fireworks from Bob's car. Later that night, Anthony questions Dignan's 75-year plan. Dignan says he doesn't have the right attitude when Anthony complains. And Anthony's like, you're right, I shouldn't be questioning you. They decide to sleep at a motel. The next scene, Anthony decides to go swimming in the morning, and he spots an attractive housekeeper. Her name is Inez. Anthony won't dye or cut his hair. He's like, nope, I ain't doing it. Fuck you, ain't doing it. I love how they're just explaining that they're criminals on the run across this fucking courtyard to one another.
Yeah. It's like they're not good at this at all.
No, at all, at all. Anthony follows the housekeeper around as she does her work. I think that would be so annoying.
Oh, yeah. He's like, totally
be annoying
he's,
as fuck.
He's annoying, like, as hell. And he's just like, and he's wearing a robe and just like following her into the rooms and fixing up the rooms while people are
It's not even a good looking robe. It's multicolored and.
But I think that is the beginning of not Owen. What's his name?
The Wes Anderson.
No.
The Luke Wilson?
The Luke Wilson character, you know, because he does that. He's like his...
You know what I mean? His kind of signature.
This becomes his signature thing, you know. They're like, hey, that's pretty cool there. Like, you just put those trash bags in there and then you leave them and then there's one underneath because you're so smart, you know? You're so dang smart. You know, it's those little quippy, like...
It's that wide-eyed, like, sweet boy that he is.
Everything's fucking amazing. Yeah. Everything's drenched in greatness, you know? It's like, gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Yeah. It was annoying. Like, it was annoying.
Yeah, I thought I was about to get hot and heavy real quick, you know?
Nope.
What was her name? Inez?
Inez.
You know? Could have done a better name.
What?
Like a penelope.
She introduces herself after he introduces himself. Then he continues to follow her and talk to her as she does her job. And he even helps her do her job, like folding some towels or something.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they had conversations about this? Or like, remember when we stayed at the hotel and there was that super hot foreign girl that couldn't talk any English and you were just trying to hit on her for hours and hours and hours? Remember that? And he's like, shut up, dude.
We cut to a barbershop where Bob is worried for his brother after news that Future Man was arrested for being a drug dealer. And with Dignan's like, oh, sorry, we're going to cancel our reservation. Something like that. The barber's like, I don't care. Inez reads a book as Anthony talks away. She is fidgeting with a locket necklace. When Anthony wants to look at what is in the locket, there's a picture of Inez's sister. But at first he thinks it's a picture of a younger her.
Yeah. Younger Inez. Yeah.
Anthony wants to keep the picture. And she freely. I know. I'm like, why the hell do you want
Can
to keep
I have
the
this? Like, this is great.
And she gives it to him. Okay. When Dignan and Bob return to Anthony's room, they find him with Inez and some of her friends. They're all drinking margaritas and having a good time.
I don't know what to think about that scene. It's like very strange. You know,
it's a motel party.
It's a motel party, and they're drinking margaritas.
Yeah, he's like, come party in my room.
He's like,
he wants her friends to like him. He's trying to make a good impression.
Yep.
Did any of them speak English?
I don't know.
That one boy did.
The boy did. I know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He did. What was his? Dang it.
forgot.
Yeah.
Hector was the dog.
Yes. Dignan gives them fake names when Anthony introduces the guys. Or at least Dignan gives a fake name. I think Bob gives up on it. Bob is mad when his situation isn't taken seriously. Bob explains to the two of them, or to Anthony, what the deal is with his brother, Future Man. Anthony says, hey, man, let's see what we can do from here and tomorrow. No, let's see what we can do from here tomorrow. If he isn't out in 48 hours, we'll go back to help him. And Bob agrees. I don't think he agrees. I don't think he ever said yes. He just sort of accepted it and was like, okay, all right, I have a plan. So Inez and Anthony go swimming at night. They flirt, eventually kissing. Dignan makes an awkward appearance. No lifeguard on duty. Oh man, like
fucking green
no boner, like,
green monster right yeah. there. Yeah,
like, oh well, there goes the mood. Thanks, bro. Before Inez leaves, Anthony gives Inez his watch during the night.
Yeah, he said, "What when it beeps, I'll call you."
Yeah, yeah. During the night, Bob takes his car and vanishes. Dignan complains about Bob leaving before Anthony reveals that Bob told him that he was leaving. He's like, "Dude, I didn't care. Like, I'm chilling." In the hotel diner, Anthony is still apologizing to Dignan about letting Bob go with the car. Anthony leaves Dignan so he can run after Inez. He finds her in one of the rooms. They have sex. The new lovers watch Dignan shoot off fireworks, and he's sad. It's like sad shooting off fireworks. He's like mopily holding them, like yeah. the head tilted to one side, like shoulders drooped. He's just like very childish. So as he's standing there, Anthony invites Dignan to go have some drinks with them in town. We cut to a Latin bar. Dignan's making a friend in the bathroom as Anthony becomes jealous of Inez's friend. And as Anthony is complaining to Inez about the man, which is very similar to what Anthony is doing. Mm-hmm. In the background, Dignan is now fighting with his new friend after accusing him of cheating at pool. Like, I like, that's old classic, like, I don't know what you would call it, but you have one thing that's mundane mm-hmm. and very peaceful yeah. and not violent happening. And then in the background, you just got this fucking brawl happening.
A bar fight going on in the background yeah. when the foreground's doesn't notice what's going on in the background. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. Then we cut to the motel room where they plan to leave the small town. Dignan wants to use Inez's access to steal keys. Anthony says no. The only option, states Dignan, is they have to hotwire a car. Anthony has a better plan, though. He decides that he'll profess his love to Inez to have her come with him and Dignan. Don't know how it was a better plan, but that was his plan. Didn't work out, because in the diner kitchen, Inez tells Anthony, I'm not doing it. In fact, she wants him to leave the motel. The next morning, Dignan gives Inez an envelope from Anthony. Inez has a translator. He has a translator tell Dignan to tell Anthony, I love you. But he doesn't, there's no pass it on chain. So everybody knows where this mm-hmm. this goes. It doesn't go any further than Dignan. Dignan steals a car for him and Anthony. Like his first attempt. Like, he tried to use the coat hanger. He put like the hook end of the coat hanger, not even fashioned correctly to try and do it right. It was a normal coat hanger. And he tries once and he looks around. He's like, oh, I see another car way in the back. And I believe that is also the same car that Mr. Henry drives, but it was just a more beat up version. Mm. Back at the motel, now Inez is questioning her decision. She's sitting there doing, like, I don't know, the biting of the lip, playing with the locket, like, however she remembers.
Tantalizing.
Yep. The two men break down on the side of the road, and now Anthony wants to go home. He's tired. Dignan doesn't want to. Then Anthony ends up revealing, after Dignan asks about the money, that he gave it all to Inez, the whole $500. And Dignan goes ballistic.
he calls in as the housekeeper, and Anthony doesn't like that. Dignan tells Anthony how he felt when Anthony was in the hospital, and then Anthony gets a fist from the face, or gets a fist to the face from Dignan, and they part. Cut to Anthony and Bob running. A narration of a letter to Grace lets us know that Anthony's staying with Bob, as well as keeping her updated on their job situation and life. There's a montage of Bob and Anthony working at various occupations, mostly Bob working and Anthony just like doing nothing. Like, I think they were trying to do some construction and Anthony was lounging and they were both eating somebody else's lunch. No,
they were eating their lunch, but somebody came and took some of their food.
Okay, yeah. Okay. All right. But yeah. While they were doing that, yeah. What was the other one?
The newspaper route.
They had a newspaper route. He was coaching soccer.
Oh yeah.
Little girls soccer.
Yeah.
They were doing construction, and was there something else? Wasn't there?
Yeah, I don't remember at the moment. I know there was one other one. At near the end, or during this whole spiel, Anthony encourages Grace to, at the minimum, learn a language in school. He's regretting that he didn't speak any Spanish.
Yeah, his dear Grace. Everything's going fine here. Don't do what I did.
Then sometime later, Dignan, in a yellow jumpsuit, approaches Anthony when he's out running with Bob's dog Hector.
He's fucking stalking him. He's sitting there waiting in front of the house. Mm-hmm.
And he's driving around with Applejack.
What do they say about the yellow jumpsuits? I can't remember that. Is there any reason? Do they say anything about it?
I don't remember saying it. He's just kind of, because they don't explain things like that a lot. They're all wearing
yellow jumpsuits to do a fucking robbery. He's like, what the fuck?
Because he's like, only if you get us some of those yellow jumpsuits. Like, I want to get some of those yellow jumpsuits. I think they're just trying to be nice to him, really. But he thought a yellow jumpsuit, there's always that thing. You can get in anywhere if you're wearing a jumpsuit. You know?
Yeah.
A friend of mine.
It's not half true. It's true. It's half true. It's half true.
A friend
true,
of mine
definitely.
Walked into the mall wearing a jumpsuit, carrying a clipboard, and walked out with one of those chairs in the middle of the mall.
Sure.
Yeah, with a friend too. Yeah,
that or a ladder.
Yeah. If you look like you're supposed to be there,
yes,
then you are there.
Yes, like it works to an extent. Mm-hmm. Definitely, there are areas where it's definitely, yeah. I could walk somewhere mm-hmm. with my bag and my ladder and my vest on.
Yeah.
And look like and go do some shit mm-hmm. somewhere. Somebody would eventually come by and ask, but that'd be property management.
Yeah.
Something like
most
that,
people
but.
Are gonna ignore you because they don't care. They expect somebody to be doing something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so we would love if you would challenge me and Trevor to where can you get into and what are we having with us? Like, please email us. No, send a DM.
State, city, county.
Yeah,
like,
wherever. Yeah.
No.
I'll walk right into the White House, dude. I got like it.
No, I don't know why it was yellow, but I know that he ended up that Dignan bought them because it was like a good deal. He got like 12 for something. I don't know, like $50 or $70 mm-hmm. bucks or something. And that's why he had that. I think that's the extent of what they of the explanation of the yellow jumpsuit.
And I'm sure that one of the reasons they were yellow is because Wes Anderson likes bright colors.
Yeah.
And rich, you know, like you're not going to have the tan jumpsuit. It's going to be yellow. It's going to be red. It's going to be like he always has bold colors.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And as after the pair catch up briefly, Dignan then introduces Anthony to Applejack. Dignan and Applejack take Anthony to meet Mr. Henry, who's played by James Caan. He gives Dignan a hard time about Anthony, but he's just jerking his chain. Mr. Henry is very impressed with Anthony. When Mr. Henry asks Anthony if he is in or out, Anthony declines the offer. Cut to outside of Bob's house where Dignan tries to convince Anthony one last time. Very short scene. It's like, you sure? It's like, give me some time to think about it. Scene over.
It's funny because what I caught from the trivia was that they basically 1981 Thief,
Mm-hmm. The movie starring James Caan.
That's like kind of. Is this a? You think this is possibly a continuation of that character?
Maybe.
I don't. I mean, I think the one of the only reasons they got James Caan was kind of like that's the guy they could afford, and then I don't know that he. I don't know why, because James Caan, of course, was kind of a. The studio, I think the studio got it for him or yeah. them, you know.
With, sure.
This was his time. Like, it was after some of those, like, mob movies he was doing. He was kind of, like, on this downtrodden mm-hmm. thing. Because, what, a few years after? Not a few, but.
Well, James L. Brooks helped produce it, so you never know. He may have owed fucking Brooks a favor or something like that, or just yeah. had a good relationship with them.
Or Polly.
Sure.
Polly, the other producer, is, you know, brought. She's a big producer. She did a lot of stuff. So her daughter was in the movie. She was the girl who outside the hospital who said hi to Anthony when he came down. You know, and she's Peter Bogdanovich's. Oh God, I can't say his name sometimes. Peter Bogdanovich's ex-wife. You know, like, so they have a lot of connections in this movie.
Sure, with
the, you know, stuff like that. And that's where I was kind of guessing that she's the one who got Caan.
Possibly, sure, yeah. That's all I'm guessing. Like, it did mm-hmm. If it's not Wes Anderson or anything like that, it's going to be one of the producers, something yeah. like that, who has a behind yeah. the scenes hand and like, hey, all right, I got somebody who can get in this, who mm-hmm. do it for scale and a big name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think he started doing that though. He was just that, like, because he didn't want to do feature films. I feel like he, like big parts. You know, I felt like he just kind of wanted to be like this small thing that was
did you
in
feel
the movie.
That? Is that how you
yeah,
felt?
Because I mean, later on he did what was it? The Way of the Gun, was that 2001 or two or something like that?
Oh yeah, it was 2002.
Ryan Phillippe and Benicio
Del Toro. Ooh, such a good one.
That's a good one. But that's more of an indie movie too. So I like, you know, maybe he just wanted to like scale back.
I don't know. James Caan wasn't a top tier anymore, and he just wanted to get in there. I think he wanted to get his name back out there because, I mean, he did Elf and he hated Elf. He thought it was a stupid movie, and he wanted really nothing to do with it. You know, sure. So I mean, I think he was trying to stay relevant with the younger generation.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
Well, eventually he
I love James Caan.
Eventually, he just went over and did like fucking CBS.
Vegas.
Yeah. He just did mm-hmm. late night. He or prime time.
Yeah, prime time. Yeah.
Which, you know, during the mid aughts, like that was a good resurgence.
Yeah.
Like cable television was a poppin'.
Television became something that a lot of celebrities saw as a death. It was either a death nail for an actor who was already established, or it was a stepping stone for a new actor, but it was never something that it was never really something you strive for. It was either something that was going to get you into the movies, or it was something that
I think it was just consistent work.
Cult,
you know what I mean?
No, it was literally thought of as beneath actors, and it wasn't until it became something that actors started getting paid decently for,
and
they started really becoming celebrities in their own right. It became a big thing.
I mean, and there's two shows
coincides with social media.
Yeah,
there's two fucking shows that showed them that you could make an ass load of money. Friends and Seinfeld.
Oh, sure.
They were the ones that said like you can make more money mm-hmm. doing television shows. A little more work, but it's mm-hmm. you know, it's not. Is it harder? I don't know. I'm not a fucking actor.
And that was the 90s still, but in the 2000s, and especially in the 2010s, you saw a lot of actors who were big actors doing television. You saw Nicole Kidman. You saw Reese Witherspoon. You saw all these actors doing film TV roles and mm-hmm. having their own these shows. Granted, they were usually limited series. You know, like they were more, you maybe call it a mini series because it became a little more, you know, sounded better. But all these actors who were movie stars started doing television.
Well, you had Magnum return to television.
We're not going to talk about that.
Magnum.
Oh, you mean Tom Selleck?
I call him Magnum.
Well, he is Magnum, but that's different. He was always a television actor.
Yeah, but he did film for.
He was always a television actor. He made a few movies. He's a television actor.
He would have had a lot more if he would have continued with. A certain movie about an adventuring.
Well, I think that Harrison Ford did a good job, and that was one of the only things he ever did that was good. That and Han Solo.
He was Jack Ryan.
Ugh. No, Alec Baldwin was Jack Ryan.
President. What was it? And then what was his name in Blade Runner?
Oh,
it was called Blade Runner.
Okay.
Ryan Gosling.
It was his name was Ryan Gosling.
That was the second one.
Ryan Gosling.
No, he was good in Blade Runner. He had three good movies to his name. I would say three good characters because he had some decent Indiana Jones movies and some decent Star Wars movies. Not all of them.
Mm. It was Henry.
We're not talking about that.
The Witness?
Good God, those were terrible. He was not good in those movies. I'm not going to say anything about the movies themselves because I think with a different actor, they would have been better movies.
One more. Oh, pretty. What is it? Working Girl. Sabrina.
Sabrina.
The Fugitive.
I've seen Sabrina.
That, again, that was that.
I didn't kill my wife.
He was so terrible in that movie. That was a Tommy Lee. That was a Tommy Lee Jones vehicle.
Tommy 100%. Lee was just there.
He killed
like,
it.
He got like he's just in the wake of the great Harrison Ford.
Tommy Lee. That's Tommy Lee Jones' movie.
I don't give a fuck what you did. I don't care. You can barely live.
And anyway, that was supposed to be Alec Baldwin, but he turned it down stupidly.
Good.
He would have been so much better in that
probably
movie.
Probably would have accidentally shot somebody back then, too.
Wow. Alec Baldwin's a good actor.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Allegedly, he was let off. So
he was a great actor.
No accusations of fault on his part.
Back to this film.
Fuck that.
Cut to Anthony at Bob's house. Dignan arrives on a mini bike to get Anthony, to get answers from Anthony. I like how he's just riding in the street.
He's like a little kid showing off his toy.
Doing all the skid stops or whatever. Yeah.
Look at my cool toy. I'm wearing my cool yellow jumpsuit and I have a cool toy and I can skid out and do all this fun stuff.
Yep.
Don't you want to be with me, Anthony?
And Bob peeks out from behind like the curtains. He's looking out there. He's like, ooh. And then Future Man arrives just out of nowhere. He comes in, makes fun of Dignan, and then leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that was a cut, though. That was a weird cut.
Sure. And before Dignan leaves, Anthony agrees to join the crew on three conditions. Dignan masterminds a plan. Bob is part of the crew. And he gets to wear a yellow jumpsuit like the one Dignan is wearing. Back at Henry's garage, Henry and his Asian cohort are practicing martial arts. And I want to go back to Dignan. No, when I at least saw what Mr. Henry's place looked like, I was like, these are not fucking landscapers. Like these, they don't do landscaping at all. Saw the bareness of it. I was like, yeah, this is
it's a front.
Yeah. They just come here and chill and play ping pong all day. That's what they do.
Yeah.
Then some night later, Anthony and Dignan arrive to Bob's house for a meeting. Bob and Dignan get into an argument about Future Man. The two men fight, and then Anthony gets punched in the mix-up. Then they all make up. Now we cut to the interior of a country club dining room during the day where the crew is having breakfast, brunch, lunch, not sure. Future Man sees Bob with his friends and tries to intimidate him. Henry turns the tables on Future Man. He does some weird martial arts wrist thing, makes Future Man poop his pants. Then Bob smirks at his brother's mistreatment at the hands of Henry. Now we cut to Dignan and Anthony who are staking out their target, which is a cold storage warehouse. So Anthony asks Dignan about Inez. And when Dignan finally tells Anthony what Rocky told Dignan via Inez, Anthony runs off from their position.
Like, that Rocky's kind of a weird kid.
Yep.
He said he loves you.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why he was telling me that.
Cut to Henry's place where now there's a party. So it's that night because Anthony's on the phone, I think, or it's a walkie-talkie being used as a phone. I'm not sure, because I saw it a couple times. I was like, it's a weird-looking cordless phone.
No, he's on the phone.
It's a cordless phone.
All right. And Anthony's calling whatever town he was in, trying to find the hotel or the motel that Inez works at. He gets the number. Whoever answers that phone the first time knows who he is. It was like, no, Like, she doesn't want to talk to you. You're not going to talk to her.
They were playing defense for Inez in Inez's best interest. Because she tells Anthony, she's like, no, you're not going to talk to her. Like, I'm not going to let you talk to her. So that's why he continues to call around until he finally gets to that actual telephone in the laundry room. Yeah. And that's what he does. And while that's happening, Henry is trying to convince Dignan to let him tag along on his job. Dignan's like, nah, man, you got to let me do this on my own. But hindsight...
Mm-hmm.
So once Anthony reaches Inez on the phone, they are both elated. Anthony is overcome with joy when Inez tells him, I love you. And her English has gotten significantly better. Bob, Anthony, Dignan, and the crew all enjoy the festivities for the rest of the night. They're all taking part in the buffet that Henry's bought for the party. The next morning, Anthony in yellow jumpsuit is keeping a lookout as Dignan, Applejack, and Kumar execute the heist plan. Anthony and Bob are having second thoughts about the robbery. Bob decides that he's going to leave his position to hang with Anthony. Dignan hears the elevator, which causes him to direct Anthony to see who's using the elevator. It's Bob. Dignan yells at Anthony and Bob as the three men who work in the cold storage warehouse emerge from the cold side. Now chaos erupts. Applejack arrives, Kumar can't get the safe open, another warehouse worker arrives, and Bob has an accidental discharge. Applejack has a heart attack. Then the fire alarm sounds as they're making their escape, or trying to find a way out, and they get out to the V-dub that they use as their getaway van. They can't open it because Applejack has the key, and he's back inside on the second story.
Why lock it?
Uh-huh.
And then Kumar somehow ended up in a freezer.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Because they were trying to show that he has dementia. Doesn't he come... Doesn't he make recurring appearances in future movies? Yes. That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. He's in all of the movies. He's Pagoda in Tenenbaums.
Okay. Great.
He's Gene Hackman's like right-hand man.
Yeah. Dignan orders everybody to run as they all stand around the van. Anthony doesn't want to, though. He wants to go back for Applejack, except Dignan decides that he will do it instead. Then we cut to Henry stealing all of Bob's parents' furniture and whatever is in there. Then we go back to Bob and...
As he slowly puffs on that cigar.
Uh-huh.
Looks like this. Uh-huh. Just he's like,
and it's like guilty. It's like missing a couple frames too, like, or it's a slower shot.
It is slow shot.
Like see.
It's a Wes Anderson shot.
Okay.
But the whole point, I feel like, is this: is to show you the difference between half-assed, shitty, fucking thieves
and well-executed.
Like, do the con, fuck people over. You know, it's like it's much easier to do that way than fucking. Doing a fucking B&E, you know?
Yeah, well, they go and do wealthy people's yards, and they know exactly when they're out of town and when there's nobody at home, and
nobody's gonna think better of somebody going around the backyard if you got a leaf blower backpack and a weed sprayer pump, you go around back with a lawnmower
in a jumpsuit.
Yep.
During a jumpsuit, little brown face, you can get in anywhere. As long as you got a leaf blower.
These days, I think we'll be all right.
You can pass for like a, like some kind of a South American guy or something like that. You're like, I'm from.
I don't know. So now we're back to Dignan, who's with Applejack, and they try to escape, but they don't because
he fucked up again.
Dignan helps Applejack into the car, but doesn't get the keys from Applejack and can't open the locked door. It's
just infuriating to watch.
Uh-huh,
like, it's just like bumbling. Yep. It's the most bumbling thing you could watch. And
it's not infuriating at all. It's actually pretty funny, I thought.
No, it's infuriating because you're like...
Lack of execution.
Exactly. Pisses me off.
They were all so prepared and they didn't execute.
They weren't prepared at all. That's the whole reason Dignan was kicked out of the crew in the first place because he was a useless thief. Until he found a reason for him, and it was his bumblingness.
Yes.
And his friend Bob.
Yes, yeah.
That was the only reason Dignan was allowed back in, was because he's incompetent, and he has a friend named Bob whose parents have money.
And, yeah, like you guys said, they would have done their research and looked at where Bob's at and what kind of house he has, and been like, let's do this. Then the cops chase Dignan through the warehouse until he is caught.
And when he walks through the door that says no exit.
Yeah, at least twice. And before he's taken away in the car, in a police car, he's beaten in a room that has fish. Like, I don't know. It's not relevant.
Lots of ice.
And ice. I thought it was like, well, that's a sad place to get beaten. Yeah. It smells.
Well, you got the cold end of the whatever, shoulder, neck.
Some weeks later, Bob and Anthony visit Dignan in prison. They talk about how Henry robbed Bob's house. That Applejack might have been on in the robbery, so he may not have been, like, he could have been faking that entire time. Future Man finally giving respect to Bob. Like, it might be a fuck up, but I guess you're still my brother.
During that, like, the theft, though, I could hear, you know, what was Goodfellas, I think, when it's like, it's, oh, what is it? It's, I think it's, what's his name? Shit. The good guitarist guy.
Santana?
No, the other one, the white one. Like Eric Clapton.
Eric Clapton.
Ding, 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 ding. At the end of like when they show like people getting murdered and like how everything like kind of turns on them. That was like, I in my head I can hear that music playing when it's like everything's falling apart, like he's getting robbed and then this one's going to jail and all this shit. That's just kind of like the music wasn't there, but it felt similar in scene wise to the end of Goodfellas. You know what I mean? Where it's like, this is the turn. You thought you guys were criminals? You're not.
Yeah, no. No. Kumar and Applejack may have been criminals, but Bob, Dignan, and Anthony definitely were not.
No, they were they were set up by Applejack, Kumar, and Mr. Henry.
Oh, yeah. After they've done eating, because I guess apparently in this federal penitentiary, you were able to bring food in from the outside, which is really weird.
Wasco.
Yep. And as Bob and Anthony are saying goodbye through the prison fence, Dignan turns to them serious, like, says, hey, are you ready for the escape plan? He's like, you got this? All right, cool. You only got this much time. And the two free men are looking at each other confusedly and very nervously. And it's just a joke. He's just messing with them. And then the movie ends with...
There is an important line, he says.
Well, yeah, it's like, isn't it funny how you started...
He's like,
I ended up in prison or something like that.
No, he said, it's funny going from a loony bin to the prison.
Mm-hmm. No, he said, isn't it funny you were in a mental hospital and now I'm in prison.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yes. And then Dignan... looks back longingly as he is back. He looks longingly back at his friends before he is filed away back into prison.
It ends with a Wes Anderson slow-mo.
Yep. Yeah. That was Bottle Rocket. That was Wes Anderson's first movie. And, you know, wait. They didn't shoot any Bottle Rockets on film. They shot Roman Candles.
I thought they were Bottle Rockets, no?
I knew that he was throwing, like, poppers, like when he was out in the
field. I don't know what Bottle Rockets are.
Bottle Rockets are the stick on the end.
Like,
and you can hold them if you want, but you put it in the ground, you light it, and then it goes up. It's like a tiny, tiny firework, like normal, like air fireworks that you would see on 4th of July, basically.
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
Because I thought, I don't know. I don't really.
I think they shot him at one point. It might have even been like during the montage of a shooting thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, they were shooting some stuff off.
That is true. That is true. Yeah. I would have to. I'm wrong. That's the sound for
that's
it.
That's the sound of it.
Yeah. Ooh. So, Megs.
We'll call that deducting brownie points. You have one brownie point deducted today, sir, Mr. Brown.
How many do I start out with?
Yeah, that's questionable. We don't even know. No one knows. I think she keeps them in her head. I just kind of say stuff, and then we kind of go from there.
Okay.
We don't have a production team. So if we did have a production team, they would be the people to go like, you have like 7 brownie points taken away today, buddy. Yeah.
Well, what'd you think, Mags?
Well, I still love the movie.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I think it holds up. I've seen it, of course, many times over the years, so it's not like I haven't seen it since 96 or 97 whenever it came out on DVD. Or, I'm sorry, VHS. But, I mean, it is a movie that I probably don't watch as much as some other movies, but I have seen it a lot over the years. And I still love it.
Is this a movie for you where you could sort of like... watch it and then walk away and do something and just know by what's said of like, oh, I know exactly where they're at right now.
Yeah.
Okay. I have some movies like that for myself where I don't need to actually see the scene, but if they say something like, yeah, I know exactly what scene this is.
Yeah.
I know what part of where I'm at in the movie.
There are hobbits in that by any chance?
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes they're hobbits. Sometimes they're full-blooded wizards or half-blooded wizards.
Oh.
Or maybe they're humans fighting xenomorphs. An alien that hunts humans. Like, there's other ones.
Okay.
Big insects on alien planets.
Mm.
Yep.
Gotcha.
I had a lot of movies like that. Well, what rating would you give this movie?
I'm going to give it 4 yellow jumpsuits.
Okay.
And
that all right.
And it doesn't get a perfect score because it is it's a freshman, you know, film for who I consider to be a great director. And it does need a little, you know, it's of its time. It's raw. It's not, you know, as polished as his latter stuff. And even his sophomore film, I think, was incredibly polished. But he had a lot more money to work with.
And also, you got to think, those were debuts for the Wilsons.
Those were debuts. Oh, sure. They weren't actually planning on being in the movies. Yeah. They just didn't have anybody else to be in the movies.
So not bad for a debut.
They did really well. And it kicked off careers for both of them. Unfortunately, not for all three, but for two of them. And, but you know, they had a lot more money for, you know, for post-production and all that stuff for the latter film. So they were a lot more polished. Than
editing reshoots. Apparently when it went to Cannes, they reshot the entire beginning because they didn't like it. So they had to reshoot the whole beginning. I don't know what part of it, but probably the first 10, 15 minutes, I want to say, they had to do reshoots on.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, that's part of your budget as well, so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, nowadays, what do they say? It's 60-40, like actual movie budget to advertising.
Yeah.
But when you see a budget, that's what it is nowadays.
Yeah, I think it's like 60-40, 50-50s, roughly something like that.
Roughly in that area,
I don't know. That's only what I have heard.
It's hearsay, exactly. Yeah. I don't fucking know. I'm not a movie executive. I've never fucking had the ear of a producer.
No. Nope.
You know?
No. Nope.
Except for the one I cut off that one time.
Ooh. Confessions from Josh.
I didn't cut shit off. I bought it on the black market.
All right, cool. 4 out of 5 yellow jumpsuits.
Mm-hmm.
Josh, how about you? What'd you think of this and your rating?
I'm going to... Listen, I enjoy the movie. I recall the first time I watched it. I'm very foggy on a lot of it, though. So it was just like, I remember Bottle Rockets, and he was a nut, and then they were stealing shit, and it was very childish, and like their behaviors and stuff like that. I didn't remember James Caan being in it at all. But yeah, it was a long time ago. I was probably drunk when I watched it. But, I'll say this. I'm going to give this 3 no Bill Murrays because Bill Murray's not in this, which is fine. It would be 4, but you know what it's missing? They're missing sexy. You know what I mean? If they would have had one sexy, super sexy woman or sexy man in there, just some stupid part, I would have, I don't know what it is, but I feel like that would have tied the movie better together. I'm crazy though.
Like I feel like
do you know what I mean?
That would be so un-Wes Anderson. That's it what wouldn't I was even gonna be funny.
Say. It's like even from what I know, seeing Wes Anderson movies, that's not a like
that's
that.
Not a thing.
I don't care. That's what I like.
That's fine. That's all right. Like, not a problem.
Yep.
And what was the rating?
Three. Non-Bill Murrays.
Three non-Bill Murrays. That's right. Three. Because
he wasn't
Bill
in
Murrays.
This movie.
Yep. Yep. Well. You got your vindication through Life Aquatic. You got all the Bill Murray that you could handle.
I mean, there's I don't need vindication. I'm just saying there's no Bill Murray in this.
Very true. Very true. There were some good funny moments. I did laugh at some of the jokes that Owen Wilson was part of. Like, it was great. It was funny. I think a lot of the dialogue, I think the dialogue really wasn't what it turned out to be in his later career.
It's not polished, definitely.
Oh yeah.
I think the dialogue is almost better in this movie than it is in a lot of the other ones.
Okay.
I think it's
maybe
because I think it's so subtle.
Sure.
And his dialogue is subtle.
Yeah.
I think that the dialogue in this, because Owen Wilson is still part of the writing team, is better than it was until Darjeeling, when he stopped working with him as far as writing, when they stopped working together as writers. And that's why it falls off at Darjeeling for me. Dialogue wise.
Yeah.
So to me, this is the dialogue that really got it going for me.
Okay.
Where I was like, this guy, this is what I want to watch more of, because the dialogue is so strong in this. At least it's subtle, but it's hilarious. I laughed the entire time I'm watching this movie. But, you know, if it's also like, you were a little kid when this came out, you didn't see it. So, you know, now that you're an older guy watching in the movie, you know, you're sometimes, I don't know.
It's different. It wasn't of my time. It wasn't of my generation. Like I know it came out while I was alive, but it wasn't reflective of my experience of America at that time and how these characters can seem relatable to the viewer at that time, especially someone who could at least comprehend the vision that was behind the movie.
I would say a lot of indie movies were kind of regional, though. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if you watch
definitely.
Clerks, that's very New Jersey-esque,
sure.
It's a different kind of world. Sure, you had convenience stores here compared to there, very different.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy?
I'm not picking up what you're putting down at all. I understand that they were filmed in certain regions. I don't really get that. That's not something. I watched Clerks and I thought it was like this amazing new kind of film that we've never seen before at the time. You know, because it was kind of one
I'm
of
not
the first
the conversations. I'm just saying the settings per se. You know what I mean? Because it was like everybody's walked into a convenience store, but the customer base, the this and that, is different than like some guy that works on the west side of Phoenix. You know what I mean? Like, it's in my experience, it's very different. You know what I mean? Video stores are video stores, and you have those specific customers. Because that's all right. We're talking about Clerks now, but it's sure you have your base customers that have those idiosyncratic. I can't say the word idiosyncratic. Whatever's. Like, it's like, you know, the movie, it was like the milkmaids. It was this, it was that, you know, like people always trying to get a discount on stuff. But I'm saying the customer base, like the way they talked, their, you know, their personalities.
Their accents?
No, it's more than that, though. It's also the personalities and where they come from. We're regionally different people. You know what I mean? In my opinion, sure.
I mean, it's never. I've never not been able to watch a movie because it's.
I'm not saying you can't watch it. I'm just saying it's regionally different. And at first glance, especially when it was this, when you had movies coming out like there were in the independent genre, it was Kevin Smith's version of this, Wes Anderson's version of this. You know what I mean? It was their depiction.
It's all directors, though. I don't understand what you're going for. I think that you're just kind of like, is it a topic that you're trying to start something? Like, I don't think that it's, you can't watch it. Like, every movie is different. It.
I'm just talking about the fact that, like.
Like, a sci-fi movie is a different region. It's a totally different, like, atmosphere, you know, like
it's a different world.
It is a different world. So yeah. I don't understand, like what.
Maybe you're viewing it from the vision of affluent or where who they are as people in that world. Like none of them really have to work. It seems like they all had some type of money source, whether it was Bob or. Family money, outside of Dignan, it never made the movie never made it clear whether or not they Anthony had any type of money troubles or how he supported himself.
Well, they didn't have any money. They had that $500 that he gave to Inez, and
yeah,
that was kind of what they were living on. And they didn't like they just. I'm assuming that he could. If he wanted to go home and just take food out of the refrigerator,
sure.
We know Bob's family is wealthy and they just send him money, you know, and his brother takes it sometimes from him, but he doesn't, you know, and then they got jobs because of all the stuff was stolen and then they were living off of that. So it doesn't, I mean, they weren't living the life of Ryan or anything like
no,
that.
No,
they were just kind of like,
no, I think even without that, Anthony's explanation of his life or his decision to mm-hmm. to go into the hot to the facility, that whole interaction felt like it was very apart, at least from my experience. That's in life. Like I've never been to a point like that where yeah. I've like been like at a ski resort somewhere very fancy.
That's
or something
what
like
I,
that. I'm like.
I don't understand the inability to suspend disbelief for movies like that. I don't watch movies like that. So I watch movies to be entertained and I don't sit there and say, my life doesn't revolve around this. I don't understand this movie. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You suspend disbelief. You watch a movie to be entertained
and to
just watch the characters perform for you. And I've never understood kind of like this. It's kind of a newer thing with the younger generations where they need to, everything has to be believable and everything has to be pertained to their lifestyle or how it relates to them.
Sure.
Because that's not really what movies were throughout history, really until kind of now where people are like, that doesn't make sense for my life. I don't see how that works. It's like, no, this is a movie. This is fantasy. This is entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like this isn't, these are not real people and they're not really supposed to be. It's not a biography of any sort.
It's
just a bunch of goofballs going out into the world and doing a bunch of goofy shit and saying a bunch of fun stuff and entertaining us. And that's how I look at the movie. So it doesn't make sense that something I would have to say, oh, this doesn't pertain to my life. Cause it doesn't. Of course it doesn't.
Sure.
It doesn't pertain to my life in the least.
A science fiction movie has nothing to do
exactly.
with my life either.
Exactly.
Like, there's different, yeah. but every story has a theme. And like the some of the themes might be acceptance. Like, I don't know. I'm not saying what connected to me or what didn't connect for me was Anthony's story. Doesn't mean it's not connectable for somebody else or doesn't have to impact anybody's understanding of the movie. Just for myself.
Yeah.
Like that's what connects me to the story that makes me feel that gets me a little bit more emotionally involved into the movie. That's just how I perceive it. I'm not asking anybody to have the same opinion or view.
No, I understand that.
To understand or enjoy the story. Like, I understand what perceive your movies, and I understand that too, because I have to suspend a lot of belief when I'm watching Farscape.
Right.
Definitely. I can't relate to any of those. I do find it entertaining to watch because of the visuals and the outrageousness of it. So I understand how you can you feel connected to this movie. I think that was one point for me that just didn't connect with this, with Bottle Rocket. Like, it doesn't make a case for me. If I was rating Wes Anderson movies, this for me would probably be down towards the bottom.
Okay.
Like, but I'm not a filmmaker and I'm not a film writer. I haven't done anything. This is nothing to beat on Wes Anderson about, or Owen Wilson, or anybody involved in this movie.
I mean, it's completely stated in our title of name, which is the Amateur Movie Review Hour. So just always keep that in your sights there.
I'm not disappointed to have watched this movie. I'm very, very grateful to have seen it. And it wasn't in my movies of not going to be in my movie memory.
No, not in your movie memory.
No. And I know that I have movies that will not be in other people's movie memory. I know that for sure. And that's all right.
You watch a lot of shitty horror.
I do watch a lot of shitty horror.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, geez.
It's like, you're on Shudder again? Jesus. Yeah. Knock it off.
I will recommend it to people who have not watched Wes Anderson or who have not watched Bottle Rocket.
Well, it's like if somebody talks about it, they're like, oh, I love these couple of movies. You're like, did you watch the one that started it all? Like,
yeah.
You should probably, it's your, not a jumping off point, but like know where something came from and how it like developed.
Yeah.
As far as the careers of all the people that were in it and writing, directing, you know, stylistically. So, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. So that was those were our final reactions and ratings for Bottle Rocket. Now we will be coming.
Real quick. Do you think they tried to get Bill Murray to play the James Caan role, or was it just James Caan the whole time?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I'm just in my head. I'm just curious.
They had never met him. He didn't come along.
I'm just curious in my mind. Like, maybe he was doing a drive-through. He was at a junket for Ghostbusters. Four.
No, they got him later on.
I know. I'm stuck around.
So now we will be
coming to a theater near you.
Yep. We're coming to a theater near you. Now for our next segment, which is the next movie, and it's the final movie of this rotation of 1990 independent movies. It is Josh's pick, and Josh, what did you choose?
I'm picking a movie based on one scene. It's a very powerful scene for me. Not going to talk about that until the next time, but we're going with True Romance.
All right, okay.
Very star-studded cast.
Sure.
But, you know, Slater, that was, he'd fallen off, but, you know, and then that's a No, you don't think
he
so?
He was on top of it.
What was he doing before that?
He did a bunch of movies. You know, he did Pump Up the Volume. He did, he started with Legend of Billie Jean. Yeah. He was a child actor before that. His mother, of course, was a famous casting director.
Oh, he had a part.
I mean, Gleam in the Cube. She's going to say that. Cube. Sure. Yeah.
Oh, that was.
And Pump Up the Volume.
And that was 92.
He had Cuffs. He had, he was like doing all these movies, you know? And then he did.
I feel like this one, I think maybe. Put him into the rom-com a little bit, you know? And then what?
You think later this movie put him into the rom-com?
I think so.
Okay. I'm not sure you know what a rom-com is.
It's romantic comedy. Okay. This is what this movie's all about.
Yeah. Okay.
Watch this movie and think romantic comedy. That's all I want you to do.
Christian Slater was a heartthrob of his time, you know, at the time.
That's true.
This was kind of towards the end, you know, when he was, then he moved into some adult roles a little bit.
What was the shitty one with Travolta?
It was Boomerang or whatever. Not Boomerang. It was with Samantha Mathis and, John Travolta.
The one with the
Broken Arrow.
Broken Arrow. I knew it was some kind of like.
I remember that one. I watched that one quite a few times. She's
like, my daddy. She's like, no, you see the butterflies flying around? That means there's no nuclear stuff in the air.
That was one of the ones that kind of.
That was a good one.
That and Cuffs. That was another one that kind of
took me. Oh, Cuffs was so bad.
Yeah, okay. Well, you can watch that on Amazon.
It's rentable on Amazon and YouTube, I believe.
Yeah, that means it could be on a couple others, Apple maybe, Roku. You can find it. It's out there. It's rentable. But if you're like Megs, you don't have to.
Oh, or you can find the DVD.
The DVD.
Or the VHS.
Yeah, I'm sure that I don't have the VHS. I didn't buy VHS. It was a terrible.
Yeah, it's not good enough for that. But I would like to see. Did you watch the special features on it at all ever?
God, yeah, but I don't remember.
It was like, yeah. That's the one thing about stuff now. It's like there's no special features.
That's why DVDs were better.
Yeah,
it comes out after the fact. There are small independent distributors that'll like buy. Or at least the rights or whatever they have and print their own Blu-rays or high def and sell them that way. You can get some pretty cool stuff. I imagine that a lot of the features are coming from whichever studio or whatever.
It reminds me of the great Kurt Lazarus, though. I don't bring characters to the DVD commentary. Oh, Tropic Thunder.
All right, now with that out of the way, we come to our next segment, which is Give Me the Juice.
Ooh.
Which is what
what's
we...
your juice, m'lady? What do you have? Yes, I'm m'lady.
Yeah, Megs, what's new?
I'm watching The Residents. I just started watching that.
Okay,
it's a new series. It's a kind of a whodunit. Set in the White House, on the residential side of the White House with a death. During kind of a big dinner that's being put on with the Australian Prime Minister and Kylie Minogue. And so everybody kind of go into lockdown and they bring in kind of a
it's like kooky, right?
A kooky, yeah. Like kind of a, almost a Poirot-esque female detective. And it's fun. I enjoy it.
Okay, nice.
I like it.
Very cool. I saw the preview. It looks good.
Yeah,
it is dedicated to Andre Brower, who was originally in the cast.
And
he filmed scenes before he died. So they had to recast.
Was it Giancarlo?
Yes, Giancarlo. Yeah, Giancarlo took over for him.
Nice. Yeah. That's a good recast. Like, it's sad. I would have loved to. Andre would have been so great.
But Giancarlo is great too.
He
plays that role really well. But yeah, Andre Brower would have. He was great.
Yeah,
that was a hard one when he died because you just didn't expect it. He was
a chicken man.
He wasn't old, you know. He was
true.
He was still, you know, you expected him to still be there.
Yeah,
for years to come.
Yeah, exactly. Josh, how about you? What's so, doing? Watching, listening, reading?
I do a little bit of this and that, but I'm...
walking? I don't know.
I'm reading some weird book about like how to be a CIA guy, but I don't know how that's working out.
All right.
That's my bathroom book.
All right.
But
so he's reading a lot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's almost finished.
Yep. It's getting there, yeah. But I stumbled across a show called... Swedish Detectives.
Ooh.
Swedish Dicks. It's called Swedish Dicks.
Swedish Dicks. Swedish Dicks. And it's 2016. Peter Stormare and another guy, Jan something, I believe. But they're both obviously Swedish. But It's probably the greatest background shit you could have on while you're doing anything, because you just hear Stormare's voice. He does like the beginning and ending, like come, you know, the intro and the extra.
So the prologue and an epilogue.
Exactly. Yeah. He's like. I'm not gonna do a Peter voice. I feel like I don't do it justice.
If you know who Peter Stormare is, imagine whatever.
It's just amazing. Just hearing his voice is like, and you get 20 episodes of it, two seasons.
Oh, nice.
Which is great. Tracy Lords is like this weird bad guy thing, and then he was a stuntman, and his stuntman partner died, who was Keanu Reeves. And so Keanu Reeves is Tex, and he's like doing this Texas voice.
Nice.
And he's wearing he visions him, and it's like him wearing like all denim. He's like, "You still miss me, buddy?" He's like, "Every day, friend." They're drinking Budweiser's together, like it's imaginary. It's real. It's good. It's great background. Like I could probably watch this show like nonstop and just let it go all the time, because it's just like if I'm doing something, you know.
Yeah.
But I just stumbled across it. It's very interesting, I'll say that.
Nice, okay. Very cool, very cool. Yeah,
check that one out.
Nice.
It's on Amazon, I believe.
All right, yeah. Perfect. I've been watching it's not really new. It was new to me. Big Mouth Season 7.
Mm.
I love Big Mouth. It's very good, very good.
Mm.
Nick Kroll's fantastic. All the characters are great. Even them being able to portray the hormones and the emotions that we all have.
I thought that his hormone monster was Diedrich Bader for the longest time.
Really? Would have been cool. Yeah, because
that's what I heard the first time I watched it, and then I looked at it. I was like, oh, that was him too. But he does have that. Like good range of voices he can do. Yeah. So
I thought it was what's his name, Job.
Will Arnett.
I thought it was Will Arnett at first.
I could see that too.
And then I saw the credits. So I was like, okay, all right. I love it. It's still irreverent and hilarious. Yeah. Like it's hilarious, and I'm. Not only do I read books, but I do books or audiobooks. Whoa,
this guy's toting a lot here. Let's calm down, buddy.
I also listen to audiobooks. And keeping with who I've been reading, I'm listening to Brandon Sanderson's first novel, I believe, and it's called Elantris.
This is audio?
Yeah, audio.
Who's reading it?
I don't know the guy. Okay. I'd have to look to see who the guy is, but I'm not nobody I recognize, at least from this version that I have access to. It's cool. It has undead in a very different dimension. Like not of world, but of who the undead are and how they behave, and it's very what is called the story's high fantasy, because it doesn't even happen on Earth, and it has no relevancy to human culture other than potentially them being human but not of Earth. But it's cool. I see what I've already read, or I hear what I've already read through his other books, so it's cool. It's very cool. I'm enjoying it, and if you enjoy Brandon Sanderson, then you probably already read Elantris or are going to read it. And we would do reviews, but we don't have any reviews.
Oh.
Sorry, Josh.
Hey.
You can email us at the Amateur Movie Review Hour if you have suggestions for a movie.
Yeah, or if you want us to sneak into highly secured places dressed like certain people or having certain effects.
Or that. You can follow us on Instagram at the Amateur Movie Review Hour. And if you're not interested in listening through a streaming service, you could always go to theamateurmoviereviewhour.com and listen to our episodes there.
The website.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I'm Trevor. Thank you for listening, and I'll check you later.
Good night.
Goodbye.